And we are here for the start of the second hour of this installment of the Best of Cairo Nights. This is the producer, Sugar Shane Peterson, holding it down here for y'all. But we've got Mr. Billy Sunshine and Jack coming in to talk about the faulty premise of the new movie, 20,000 Mules.
Billy Raincloud, a.k.a. Billy Bad News. Hi, Billy.
You know, you're not wrong. Your opening makes sense. Last night we were chatting and you were trying to be kind to me and make me feel better. And you said, come on, why don't you be more optimistic, you said.
I did say that.
And what did I say?
You said, I refuse to be optimistic because I only want to live in negativity about the United States. and then you started crying, I think. And then you started throwing up in hysterics. And then I had to hang up on you.
No. None of that happened. Other than you asked me to be more optimistic.
I'm pretty sure that's not what happened. Billy, I'm pretty sure you were throwing up in hysterics on my radio program last night. And I had to throw you off. I'm almost positive that you were just throwing up all over the place, dry heaving.
You're awfully young to have such a bad memory.
Okay, Billy.
Yeah, so as to why your request for me to be optimistic, my response is, are you kidding me? Mm-hmm. There's no reason for optimism. In my life so far, I've never felt as threatened or the need to be as guarded of my country and its democracy and the people in it. Mm-hmm. We are under threat from within. Mm-hmm. So, no, don't be optimistic. Be scared. Be ready to fight for your very life in this country today. Okay. Fight for the democracy. People are stealing it. They're stealing the vote. They're stealing your democracy. They want to turn us into Hungary. Mm-hmm. Yeah, so no optimism. No thanks. Not interested.
All right. Well, what could I possibly say about that?
Thank you.
Oh, Robo-Trump. Robo-Trump is here, Billy.
Thank you.
Wow. Who would have ever... Hey, Robo-Trump, thanks so much for coming on, boss. I got to tell you, Robo-Trump, it's amazing that you and Billy have almost the identical take on almost everything. I'm just curious how you feel about that.
Perfect.
Yeah, I know, Robo-Trump. Perfect. It's pretty amazing that you and Billy have almost verbatim the same talking points about the election and also the state of the United States. I'm curious, have you been talking about... No, I mean, obviously you've been talking with Billy about this. How do you feel about talking with Billy about your conspiracy theories about the United States?
I'm glad we did it.
Yeah, very good, Robo-Trump. I think absolutely perfect.
Jack,
yes.
Right now, the right wing is going crazy because our president mentioned how it's that the MAGA ultra crazies are, never worse. And it's the truth. Mm-hmm. But, for some reason, they would like to reject that story about themselves, not surprisingly. I mean, you did hear that, right?
Donald Trump, Robo-Trump, how do you feel about the MAGA movement right now?
Tippy-top shape.
Wow. That's pretty good. That's pretty good. No, Billy, I find that kind of baseless rhetoric to be irritating and not helpful, right? Because when you run around with your head cut off, throwing up in hysterics, it doesn't, you're not actually like providing anything. And I'll supplement this with an anecdote, Billy. One time, Dave Michaels and I, the great Dave Michaels, love Dave Michaels. Great guy.
Love Dave.
He and I were talking about jobs in the economy in the state of California. This got to be 3, maybe 4 years ago. I was doing drive time radio. And this guy calls in and, Dave and I are just kind of going back and forth about, what needs to happen in the state of California to get more regular people jobs. Like not everybody in California could be a big tech bro. The same thing is true for the state of Washington, right? Not everybody can learn how to code. So Dave and I are going back and forth about it. And this guy calls in, and I'll never forget this phone call. This like loser calls in, and it's like he hasn't been listening to Dave and I talk at all. He's just so charged up. And it was as if he was like channeling like Rachel Maddow and like, you and like Chuck Todd and like all these other characters, right? And he starts making this like really grandstandy speech about the State of the Union. And he starts saying like, I'm just sitting here listening to you both talk on the radio like you've got something to say, but we need jobs. Give us jobs. jobs. Give the people jobs, because if you give people jobs, then they will have money, and they can go spend that money at businesses, and then those businesses can hire more people and make more jobs. Yeah. And you guys are here just talking on the radio, talking like you can do something about it, but we need jobs. Give us more jobs, please. And I was just sitting there, like, listening to this guy, and he's not adding anything to the conversation. He's just saying platitudes. He's just saying, like, really basic rhetorical platitudes. It wasn't interesting. It wasn't stimulating. I feel the same way, Billy, when you were just speaking, and I feel the same way when Donald Trump speaks about the way that he feels about the election. Do you know what I mean? For as much as I love Daddy, there are certain things that he says that just make me cringe so hard. I just go, ugh, Daddy, why do I have to do that?
Well, you know, Jack, that caller, you, me, and all of us, all the MSNBCs and the Foxes, we have to comment. We have to spend 24 hours a day, or like you, 3 hours a day.
I understand.
And we have to have something to say.
I understand. But some of us have deep and enriching things to say, and some of us have platitudes, Billy. And when you go around spouting platitudes, I find it deeply not interesting. I find it annoying.
It's inevitable that we're going to get some platitude along with meat, along with that good chewy stuff that matters. We're going to get both. And we just have to live through it and get through it day by day. That's all we can do. And you know, every day I come on the radio and these days I share with you the sadness about where my country is.
Right.
You might call that a platitude, but it's all I got, and I wish I had more for you.
No, well, Billy, I mean, this is why, like, I know how much you know, Billy, I would never accuse you of not reading anything. I would never deign. I would never portend, Billy. I would never.
Don't go there, Jack.
I would never make that kind of advancement towards your character.
I know where you live.
I would never possibly conjure up the idea that you don't read anything, you don't know what you're talking about. But I think what happens to some, what happens to some people, Billy, is that they. I'll give you an example, Billy. I was doing some research on the 2000 Mules documentary that everybody's losing their mind
about. Dinesh D'Souza, my favorite guy.
Dinesh D'Souza, charlatan and grifter, has come out with a documentary called 2000 Mules, and he did so with a group. I think they're called True Vote or something like that, or Vote True or something like that. And so I go on PolitiFact, which I really like PolitiFact. I think they do a lot of really good work. And as I scroll down to actually read the article, they do this really egregious thing where they say they have this box at the top of the website, and it says, if your time is short, and then they list three bullet points, which are truncated to such a degree that it poses no argument whatsoever. And this
loses its meaning.
It loses its meaning. When you reduce something down to the point of being bullet points, you are not engaging in a conversation. You're right. So I'll give you an example, Billy, the friend of the show, a guy named Carl. Love Carl. Carl comes on the show whenever he's got a gripe. I'm trying to get Carl I'm going to probably email him back, try to get him to come on. And so Carl had an experience where he goes to a dentist's office to get his teeth cleaned. And in the state of Washington, Billy, I'm sure it's the same thing in the state of California, but if you go into a medical facility, you have to be wearing a mask. Right. So he goes into this dentist's office, and the lady behind the desk very politely asks Carl if he would put on a mask. And he said, nope, I'm going to hold my shirt over my mouth like I'm a naughty child. Oh. And she says, we can't let you do that. And so he throws a fit, and then eventually they email him and they tell him that his appointment is canceled and that he can find a different dentist's office. And then he goes on this tirade against this poor woman, basically saying, look at what's happening. Look at what's happening to this country, lady. Look at what's going on in my country.
Look what a jerk you turned me into. Look how I have to behave.
look at what you're making me do. We all know that masks don't work, and we all know that better. And here's the other thing, they're letting boys into girls' sports. What has happened in my country? And we need jobs, lady. If you would just give us jobs, please give us jobs, and people could make money, and then they could go spend money at businesses, and then those businesses could make new jobs. But please just give us jobs, please. And it's like, one of the things that I tried to explain to Carl when I was talking to him is that he was, his blast of bullet points was like totally unnecessary for that 18 or 19 year old receptionist at that dentist's office. So anyway, I say the same thing, Billy, about this thing with PolitiFact. When you reduce a message to a certain degree, it loses all of its meaning, as you said, Billy. Billy, the thing about
when you're talking to the average American, you need to talk down. Turns out we're dumb.
Well, you know what, Billy, I will go on a rant about this, and I will be totally transparent with you on this. The average American in the United States has a lukewarm IQ. They have a lukewarm understanding of civics. They have a lukewarm understanding of culture. Most Americans, by and large, are stupid people. I'm not afraid to admit it, Billy. I'm really not. Now, the people that listen...
I'm curious. Stupid.
The people who listen to my show, Billy, happen to be very intelligent, very, you know, well-informed individuals.
Well, there's some truth to that, Jack. I know we're kidding and we're buttering up the audience, but actually, these people are engaged and interested.
True.
And they are smarter than the average bear. It's
truth.
True.
Truth.
Yeah.
Your average American does not have time to read over the Samuel Alito draft decision. Your average American doesn't have the time to sit down and really think about the documentary 2000 Mules, which is why there are so many people on there right now who are freaking out about this. So, Billy, basically the premise that Dinesh D'Souza throws out there is that using geo-tracking, he was able to establish a pattern where ballot harvesting was going on in certain key swing states. Now, this could be a very compelling argument to a four-year-old, but if you have a big, wrinkly brain, one of the things that you'll realize about the documentary is, A, he does not list any of the nonprofits that he claims committed widespread voter fraud. And I don't know about you, Billy, but if I've got evidence to accuse somebody of a crime, generally I will name that individual. And the second thing that he does that's equally as irritating is he does not compare this geo-tracking data in swing states to deep red states or deep blue states. So he has no control whatsoever. So as a science experiment, it falls apart entirely. Billy, do you know what geo data is? Do you know what, like, geo-tracking data is when it comes to his cell phone?
I have a vague idea about what it is. Yeah, you know what? Billy, really quick.
For the people that don't know what it is, just so I can explain, it's this idea that you can triangulate someone's location down to a series of meters.
Using their phone?
Using their phone, but using the cached data from advertisers, which is fascinating. Police use it. The FBI uses it. But unfortunately, one of the things that happens is because you're triangulating that location, the person could be 15 feet away, they could be 30 feet away, they could be 45 feet away. There's no way to truly approximate that location. And the entirety of the case that Dinesh D'Souza makes relies on the idea of ballot harvesting, which, by the way, is legal in all of the states that he is talking about. So I don't necessarily see what the big deal is about this documentary unless you're a four-year-old and you want to believe that the election was stolen from Donald Trump. I'm done now, Billy. Thank you.
Yeah. You know, what's interesting is, what did he do? He made a movie. So he made a movie so he could profit.
Right.
What he didn't do was show up in court with all his evidence.
No.
Because what we've seen is 50 court cases that tried to make that argument, but ultimately there was no evidence. In every case, no evidence. And that's why you make movies and you make money to, as you point out, gull the fools, because they're not very bright. They're just not very bright.
Yeah, I also want to point out that Dinesh D'Souza is not a what we might consider to be a classic conservative. I'm going to poison the well on this totally, because Dinesh D'Souza he's just a terrible human being. In 2014, D'Souza pled guilty to felony campaign finance violations after he used straw donors to donate in excess of the personal limit to a friend who was running for the U.S. Senate seat in New York. Okay, so.
No, wait, stop there.
Yeah.
Just stop right there.
Right.
So what do we know about the man? We know exactly what we need about this guy.
He's a cheater.
He doesn't respect the country. He doesn't respect the vote. He doesn't respect anything that we value.
Yeah. And
he loves money, and that's it.
And if that's not far enough, I also want to point out, just to remind everybody, that back in 2018, Dinesh D'Souza decided to mock the survivors of the Parkland shooting. Mock them. So basically what he said is worst news since their parents told them to get summer jobs. These are kids who witnessed a shooting, and this loathsome piece of human excrement decided to mock them. And now you're asking me, this is what people are asking me. You are now asking me to take a man who A, commits campaign finance fraud, and B, makes fun of children who have survived a school shooting. You want me to take that man seriously? I'm waiting. And then he makes a documentary on dubious evidence at best. And everyone's like, oh yeah, Dinesh D'Souza, 2000 Mules, Jack Stein. Have you seen this documentary? I've seen enough of it to know, because I passed eighth grade science, that if you do not have a control in an experiment, it is invalid, 100%. So where is the data, Dinesh D'Souza, from, let us say, California, which also allows ballot harvesting? Or where is the data, let us just say, from Nevada or any of these other places? He doesn't have it. And Billy, the most important part of this and the most irritating part of all of this is that he does not name the nonprofits that he claims committed or swung the election. What kind of idiot do you take me for when you claim and back it up with nothing? I'm done, Billy Sunshine. Give us jobs, Billy. Give us jobs. We need
jobs. I've got a job for you.
We need jobs, Billy.
Yeah. I've got a job for you.
Yeah.
Here's the job. Try to figure out how we get the money out of politics. Because this is a typical example. Most of the people in politics these days are in it for the money.
Yeah.
It's become a way to just get rich in America.
Yep.
You know, every dollar you give to a campaign that eventually goes into an ad, somebody takes 15% just in their pocket. You know, the Lincoln Project, those wonderful Republicans who fought against Trump, they also got rich doing that.
I don't know about the Lincoln Project, Billy.
Absolutely. They all take their money off the top.
All right, Billy, I'm getting out of here. I'm kicking you off my show. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back with Tarek Ansari right after this.
Howdy, folks. We are still here in the best of Cairo Nights, and we've got Mr. Tarek Ansari stopping by to talk about the concept of stolen land.
One question. Is it cringe or is it based? Tarek Ansari. Wow. Wow, Tarek.
Wow.
What a story.
Oh, my gosh. We got to stop the show now. That was too good. I can't one up that.
I'm sorry, Tarek. It's a Monday. What do you want me to do? My improv skills are always a little rusty on Monday. That's the problem with, like, by Tuesday, I'm making references that you could not believe. I'm talking about Weekend at Bernie's. I'm talking about Alan Thicke. I'm making all kind of 90s references. I'm talking about Tia and Tamara. I'm going all over the place, Tarek. I'm sorry.
Tia and Tamara. Oh, my God. Wow. Well, I'd like to thank you for that so much, because I was born in 1999, and technically that means I'm a 90s kid, so I 100% know every single reference they're going for. My gosh.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So Jack, I hope you had a good weekend. Hope all of you listeners had a great weekend. I have a heck of a story for you about what I did this weekend, and what I did was go to the University of San Francisco and watch a play, The Great Gatsby. That's right. Adapted to the stage by the many fine students of USF. And I was excited. I hadn't seen a show in, I don't know how long, probably at least 2 years, a theater show. And I love The Great Gatsby, love the book. So I went in, I sat down, we're all excited. We all had to wear masks because, you know, ha ha ha. I don't know why. Honestly, I really don't know why. But anyway, the director goes up, hey, thank you so much for coming to the show. I appreciate you for coming. Just want to let you know a few things. And when she said that, I was like, oh, you know, be sure to turn your cell phones off. And, you know, there's the exit signs, that kind of stuff, the kind of stuff you'd expect at any performance. But no, she leads off with this. Here's what she says. I just want to let you all know that this play you're watching is being watched on stolen land. That's right. We stole this land from the Native Americans, from the Miwok. And I just want you all to know we stole that land. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we hope you enjoy the show. Also, second thing, trigger warning. This is The Great Gatsby. So there might be gunshots and there might be domestic violence and a lot of yelling. So if you don't feel comfortable with this, please feel free to walk out. And also, you can't get back in, but you can walk out. Feel free to walk out. And I was just looking at my roommate and my other friends, and I was like, huh?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. Is it just me? Like, I come from a conservative town. I worked for a conservative station. Maybe it's just me. I don't know. This seems a little over the top, fit too far left. I think it was a little fringe. I see where they're going for here, but it did not come off in a very enlightening manner. It came off in a, you know, feel bad about your situation manner.
Yeah.
I don't like
it. Yeah.
I don't.
Tarek, I got a, you know, one of my degrees is in anthropology. And let's all take a little lesson, shall we? Let's all take a little a trip down whose land belongs to who, shall we? Let me explain something to people. All land is stolen land. It doesn't matter if you're in Mother Africa. It doesn't matter if you're in the Caucasus. It doesn't matter if you're in South America. All land is stolen land. Human beings, for better or for worse, are creatures of conquest. For literally hundreds of thousands of years, we were bashing each other's skulls in with rocks and sticks and killing and maiming over what, Tarek Ansari? Dirt. Literal dirt and trees and garbage. Human beings, it's a worst part of our nature, are violent beings. We steal and we take and we rape and we destroy. Now, we live in a civilized society that we like to call the United States. So we don't necessarily do that anymore. What do you want to do? This is a question I got to ask all the people out there that say, we live on stolen land. Guess what? Whatever tribe you're talking about, you know what they did? They stole it from the people who were there previously. You would have to go all the way back, Tarek Ansari, to the people who emerged from the Sub-Saharan Valley and went into the Caucasus to determine what is actually, quote-unquote, stolen land. If you want to get really specific with it, Tarek Ansari, genetically speaking, we are so different from those people. It's not even funny. So when there is someone tries to make that argument to me, I just think to myself, what are you talking about? Is this some kind of feel good nonsense that you're just throwing out into the world so that you can assuage the guilt that you feel about living on stolen land? I was just in Maui. I felt awful for the native Hawaiians. What do you want me to do about it? That's what I'm saying, Tarek Ansari. You know what they did in Hawaii, by the way? They just reached a settlement. $328 million for a group of native Hawaiians who were put on a waiting list to be able to lease property for $1 a year. They sued because the process was so complicated and they won. So now they're not only they're going to be able to lease that land, but now they're going to be able to have the resources to do so for generations. I am so sick and tired of these blowhards, Tarek Ansari. They are so anthropologically and scientifically illiterate. It's not even funny. It's like embarrassing. How could you get up in front of a group of people and say, oh, by the way, we're on stolen land? Yeah, you are, lady. You are. Guess what I'm doing? I'm sitting here enjoying the Great Gatsby. Get out of my face.
Yeah, and that's the other thing. I kept thinking, why does this apply? Like, I'm sorry, the Great Gatsby is not. I mean, I don't understand. I literally actually out loud went, huh? And apparently that makes some of my friends not so happy because everybody else on the far, far left.
No,
was like,
based.
Oh.
Based.
You know, but
based, Tarek. No, Tarek, you say that louder next time. I demand that you do it, young man. The next time somebody says that, you got to go, what you talking about, lady? What you? You just start shouting it, Tarek. You just start shouting at that lady.
Yeah, and then
boo!
That's
what you say.
Yeah, that's right. That's
boo!
Right. Like, me at every baseball game. That's right. That's right. Got to be the Jackson boo.
Yeah.
Oh, man. I'll tell you, I was also dumbfounded by the fact that the people saying this, like the director, as well as the people that I talked to afterwards, when I said, I don't know how I feel about that. And of course, naturally, everybody who went to USF, my friends of friends who go there, who were in the play, defended it and said it's the right thing to do. And I was like, okay, sure it is. And I hate to say this, I really do. But it tended to be, you know, Caucasian, upper, middle, upper class background saying this. And I mean, good, I guess. But like, as someone who's like of mixed race descent, who like kind of looks at this and is confused, for you to talk down to me and say, hey, this is the right thing to do. We need to be more, you know, inclusive, racially inclusive to our past.
Please.
I'm like, Is that right?
Please.
Talk about your experience to me. Do you want to tell me about that one time when you went to McDonald's and you didn't get your fries? That's the worst problem you've had this entire week. My gosh, yeah. You've lived a life. You Please. Can tell us all how to live
Tarek,
our life.
Tarek, I have no sympathy whatsoever for a bunch of rich blowhards in the Bay Area who are like, oh, we live on stolen land. It's like, okay, lady, then give it back. If you feel that bad about it, give it back legitimately. And I don't say that to be like hyperbolic, and I don't say that to be rhetorically. If you want to, there are Native American people out there that would be glad to take your multi-million dollar property in the Bay Area. They would be glad to do it. I am so sick of these people, Tarek. I had no time for them whatsoever. And speaking of no time, I'm kicking you off my show, Tarek. I'm kicking you off my show. And congratulations on being based and scoffing at that stupid lady. Good job, Tarek. That's an excellent thing to do. Next time, though, be a little bit more rude to a public speaker. Why don't you?
that's what I'll do. That's what I'll say. Jack Stein taught me to be rude to public speakers.
Yeah.
All right.
All right. We'll take a really quick break. We'll be right back with News of the World. It's coming up right after this.
We are here at the end of hour number two of this installment of the Best of Cairo Nights, and this is my segment, News of the World, and on this particular day, me and Jack talked about a particular panel that raised a lot of doubts about mental health screening for children.
Where we go to strange and foreign lands where panels decide that we're no longer going to be screening at-risk children for potentially one of the most devastating and crucial ailments of our time, News of the World, where we challenge idiocy on a nightly basis. Shane, I am blown away by this story. Do you want to explain to us why this panel is asserting that we should no longer screen kids for this particular question when they are seeking help, I guess is a nice way to put it.
Yeah, so basically the story is it's coming out of the AP News, and it's talking about how the U.S. Preventative Service Task Force has basically come out, and they have said that there is not enough evidence to recommend routinely screening kids who show no obvious signs of being suicidal. And this is a document that is open to public comments until May 9th, and anybody can weigh in on this argument, because I think this is an important one that we should definitely talk about, because it is a really, you know, kind of crazy issue. I mean, in 2020, suicide was the second leading cause of death from age 10 to 14, and the third leading cause of death from 15 to 19. And this all comes from, you know, the Federal Center for Disease and Control and Prevention. These are concrete numbers, and there's a lot of different issues about you know, what precautions need to be taken for certain children who might be showing, you know, mental distress or showing some sort of signs of having some sort of problems. But when I read this article, and the reason I wanted to bring it to your attention, Jack, is, you know, I myself, and I know plenty of other people I know, you know, have suffered from mental illness. And a lot of the time, some of the people who I've known who have taken their own life, they have been the ones that have been the most quiet. So the idea that if you see a kid and he's quiet and you don't suspect anything, that he's not susceptible to any type of danger, he, she, they, anybody who is dealing with these types of problems, it's something that needs to be taken attention to. And this article that I found in the AP News is actually recently highlighted. There was a suicide of a 12-year-old girl in Elkhart, Indiana, a week or two ago, and it all basically was all around being maliciously bullied for alopecia, not having hair and suffering from an autoimmune disorder. And what people sometimes often forget is that kids are some of the cruelest and meanest people that you can find. Some of the meanest and most heartbreaking things that were said to me were by, you know, younger people without any knowledge. And the fact that it can push people to the edge, and now we're taking steps back from trying to prevent something like this when, after we've gone through a pandemic where depression rates and suicide rates and substance abuse rates and addiction has all risen across the board for people of all ages, it's quite a shocking thing and needs to be brought to people's attention, I think.
I agree, and I don't understand this argument that they're trying to make, that by posing the question, you are because this is the argument that the panel is making, that by asking the kids if they've ever considered or attempted suicide, that you are incepting that idea into their brain. Like, what do you, I don't, this is it, everything we know against science. Like, Shane, if I ask you if, hey, Shane, have you ever had a Cadbury egg? You ever had a delicious Cadbury egg filled with cream, delicious cream?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Love the cream.
You're supposed to say no.
Okay, no. I do. You asked the wrong question. I like a Cadbury egg,
right.
But no, I haven't. Like, they suck. No, I've never eat one.
But like, do you now have the dramatic urge to go out and get a Cadbury egg? I mean, it's a weird kind of bizarre thing where it's like, if we talk about it, then we bring it up in people's minds. You know, Shane, I tried to take my life 6 times in total, a couple drug overdoses, tried to flip a car twice, slit my wrist one time. And it really wasn't until I started talking about it openly with people, because I was so ashamed of it. I was so ashamed of being hospitalized, and I was so ashamed of even the attempt of it, that it wasn't until I started opening up to psychiatrists and therapists and talking about it when I got the best advice that any therapist ever gave me. My very good friend, Alan Miller, MD, he said to me, and it sounds so trite now, but at the time, it was like revelatory. He said, you know, suicide is a permanent solution to temporary problems. And for me, at like 23 or 24, that was like, you know what I mean? It's like next level thinking.
Mm-hmm.
The only way that I was able to get that kind of guidance from a psychiatrist was because he asked me the question, I answered it, and we talked about it openly and honestly. This idea that we have to hide it from children, or we have to like not present it to children, this is like anti-science at the highest, and I refuse to put up with this level of idiocy. I refuse.
It's gross. It is really gross. And yeah, I mean, I myself and other people I know, people have been hospitalized, and myself included, for mental health problems. And we need to really help the youth, because, you know, the youth that are having these issues, you know, if we keep them around and we give them the tools to fight through it, we'll have some of the strongest people in society. So I'm
so
really
based.
Hoping. I'm really hoping for
so them. Based. This is a stupid panel filled with stupid people. I'm not supposed to call people names anymore. I was given a note by our management saying, Jack, you got to stop calling people names. I don't care. These are stupid people who do stupid things, and they should not be on this board making their stupid decisions about children and their mental health. All right. Speaking of, by the way, very smart people, very intelligent people, people who we love and respect, Stacey Jo Ross dropping in. We're going to be talking about Dwayne Haskins and what we know about it right now, and also some cringe boomer takes coming up right after this. Don't.